Today on the Be Sexy, Eat Plants podcast, we have Dr. Brian Clement. Brian is a co-director of the Hippocrates Institute, founded in 1956. The Institute is a holistic healing center where thousands of seekers have retreated and recharged over the last 60 plus years. They offer complete wellness programs that address many common ailments or alignments, including heart diseases, obesity, MS, Lyme, chronic pain and diseases, as well as cancer. The Institute follows the ethos of ancient Greek Hippocrates in declaring, I will give no deadly medicine to anyone. Brian, we're so happy to hear more about Hippocrates. I hear more about your own story, which is fascinating. And thanks for joining the show today.
Well, it's nice to be with you today.
Before we go into Hippocrates, because our community wants to hear more about that, obviously, and what you all have to offer. Let's start with you. How was your journey? How did you become the co-director of a healing center? And your story is fascinating. How did you get there?
Well, I think I really needed a lot of healing, to be honest with you. We usually are attracted to what we need. And so as a young American guy, you know, I was really well ahead of the curve. I was fat and big before everyone else. And so when they say big and loud Americans, I was there. I was right at the top of the list. You looked at the encyclopedia, my picture was there. And it wasn't working. I was very young. I was in my late teens, 20 years old. And I recognized that although I had a very nice life, you know, I had parents that loved me. I played music, which I loved. Hmm. There was something inside of me that was obviously broken. And so I was abusing myself. You know, today we have names for these things, anorexia and bulimia, but I had an obesity abuse. And it's the biggest abuse nobody talks about because it's so common. And so I was eating to squash my feelings. And of course, the best thing to do that with is death. So it's very easy to consume flesh of an animal or milk from the bosoms of a creature. Because if you're feeling dead and you're feeling uninspired, the fuel for death and lack of inspiration is that. And I met the wackiest person I'd ever met in my life, who was 70s at that point, and told me these wild stories I didn't believe, you know, how she healed cancer on a plant-based diet. And I thought she made all these stories up. She must have been on LSD or something. And the truth of the matter was she didn't make it up. And she impelled me to look deep into myself and ask the questions I'd never asked. As a man, we weren't required to do that. Mm-hmm. Women, in the burden of our cultures and societies, always have to look at how they look and how they feel and how they speak and how pretty they are. We could just be fat slobs then and today. And I was one of those. Mm-hmm. And so the reality is, as a man, it was difficult, but I did. And I answered the questions that were sort of silly. Why somebody who has a great life is doing this? And it was because I wasn't living my passion. And once I released myself and permitted myself to be the authentic Brian, not the persona Brian, things completely radically shifted. And I then started to study, you know, even today, in the day we're talking, there's not a great formal school that you can learn about progressive healthcare and about plant-based diet. We've made an attempt, Dr. Esselstyn, Dr. Campbell, Dr. Katz, Dr. Wallach out of Harvard. And in Europe, we helped to put together the world's first graduate program in this. But you have to already have an undergraduate program in lifestyle medicine. Mm. And it's in English part of the time. And you can take it in Lithuania. Much of it's online and much of it's, but none of that existed when I started this. Yeah. And so thank goodness there were one of the first generations of this that were not only alive and flourishing, but extraordinarily kind people. Yeah. And I was trained by them. So
So that is fascinating, right? Because you were on this other path, right? This regular path, I would say, where people will go down, right? Eating.
Definitely dying.
Right. And not even feeling fat, because I heard you saying people were talking about bigger, right? It was not about being not honest, being fat. No, it was about being you're bigger. That's just the normal thing.
And what happened that you made that switch to vegetarian? And I mean, especially in that time as a man,
it was tough. I mean, my generation, you know, your generation's wildly different, but my generation, we were actually told formally in school, in education, and I was at that point at university, that consuming the flesh of an animal made you more male-like. And that the innuendo was that you were a sissy or you were homosexual or something completely distorted if you didn't consume meat. So I recall in my teens, we never even discussed it with my buddies, but we'd go out and eat and we'd say, don't even cook the hamburger. We'll just eat it. Don't even cook the steak. Blood would be sick. You know, it was this caveman mentality. And it was really, we're trying to find our sexuality at that point. And so literally, you know, we were so brainwashed. As a matter of fact, I'm a flaming heterosexual. I only like girls, and boy, do I like women. And I'm just blessed by God because my wife, I'm in love with her. She's my lover. She's the mother of my children. She's my best friend. She's my coworker. But the fact is, when I first became a vegan, I thought maybe I'm going to get a little funny. That's how brainwashing it was. Yeah. So, that was really it. So you're right. You're right, love. You picked it up. It was hard for a lot of reasons, but it was so absolute liberating. Within a matter of days, I felt like I was free. I felt like I became, you know, something with wings rather than a lump in the mud at that stage. When I look back, it wasn't the loss of weight. It wasn't the adaptation of the normal human diet, the plant-based diet, but it was literally the consciousness that that brought. Not to say I became a better or higher conscious. That's all bullshit. That's elitist stuff. I just became human at that point. You know, if you're not living with the energy to think like a human and feel like a human and have empathy and compassion, well, you're living a subhuman existence. So it made me a human, is to live in a human way.
It's so interesting you say that. When was that? In the 70s and 80s?
1970.
I remember one of my best friends had a bachelor party 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and he was going obviously in a steakhouse because it was a bachelor
party. Of course, that's the big thing, you know.
2018, 2019, right? So we're still there, right? And I was only vegan in the steakhouse, and I had a fabulous meal. I had the best meal actually of everybody because they were so excited to cook something else than meat, and everybody wanted to try my cauliflower steak, and it was fantastic.
I'm sure it had a kartoffel in it, though. Potatoes in it.
Cauliflower steak. But it was so interesting because the same kind of bro, right? Like this.
Oh yeah, yeah. Animalistic reptilian bonding of men. You know, real men bond with love and transparency and not meat. I can tell you, you know, we're wussies and sissies if we slaughter animals to sustain life. You know, real men don't need that pretense. That we basically have, you know, our roots are in the ground.
Yeah, that's true. Tell us a little more. Obviously, you changed your diet, first to vegetarian, right? I read, and then how was that journey? You lost a ton of weight. You didn't want to tell your family. Tell us a little bit more of that.
Well, 55, 60 kilos of weight.
Oh, wow.
It was a lot of weight. And the funniest story was my family, because they were equally brainwashed about protein has to come from animals. And if you don't have it, you die, you starve to death. Calcium that builds your bones have to come from milk. Or if you don't have it, you're going to crumble, you know, like Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, the damn things come down and you die and all this stuff. None of that happened. The opposite happened, in fact. And I went to my mom and dad, who always suspected I was a little strange. You know, I was a hippie. So I had hair down to my, you know, hips, and I had big mutton chop sideburns and beard down to my chest. And, you know, I was a rock drummer in those days. I used to play a lot of Jimi Hendrix music, and it was a lot of fun. It was great. And smoked a lot of dope in my life. And I'm not proud of that, by the way. I don't think it's a great thing. And I don't care if you say it's medicinal or not, it makes you dumb. I would have been a much, much smarter Brian if I didn't smoke a lot of dope.
Yeah.
And you know, the oils are different. That's not what I'm talking about. And I said, Mom and Dad, I'm no longer going to eat any animal-based foods. And they were so shocked, they actually had to flee the room, thinking, now this kid is suicidal. Our first child is suicidal. You know, my grandmother came over, my little, you know, Irish American grandmother, and she said to me, "It's okay, you're a vegan." You know, she didn't know how to say it. I didn't know how to say it then. You know, very few of us. We didn't talk to one another. But what are you? Well, and she said, "I guess I was a vegan." And I said, "Why, Grandmom?" She said, "Well, we only ate meat once a month to impress the neighbors." And I said, "What do you eat?" She said, "You know, vegetables out of our garden, organic gardens that they, when I was a little boy, they all had them in their yards." People had it. So, and then I studied that over the 50 years I've done this work. And it was amazing to me is that was true, that in Europe, in North America, other than the elite, a handful of very wealthy people who didn't eat a lot of meat. If they ate, it was small amounts occasionally. And the main courses were plants at that point. And most of your listeners may or may not know that today, animal eaters are a minority. We're still about 40% of the world's population, where the majority, 60%, primarily thrive, don't survive. We thrive on plants. And, you know, the people in their early 20s now, which I'm really, really happy to understand, are the first generation that half of them aspire to be vegan. My generation, they didn't know what a vegan was. They thought I was from the moon. I didn't know what a vegan was. I just was. But the reality is, that's a pretty, you know, I'm not saying half the population are, they call themselves flexitarians, but the reality is they want to be a vegan, you know, and that's great. So the next generation, they're going to say, who among us still eat the carcasses of animals?
Yeah.
And they're going to be outcast. Like I was an outcast. We're going to flip it in three generations.
It's changing. Yeah. I think it's, and what you mentioned, such an interesting fact, right? If you look at the world, and if you travel into more lower income countries, third world countries, right? What are they eating? It's predominantly plants, right? Rice, beans, like the stuff they're eating and grow. And it's so interesting that in this industrial, if a country becomes a little more industrial, right? The elite and wealthy becomes more there, then it seems like they adopt our Western standard American diet as a status symbol, right, of luxury versus... Well,
you're right. You know, when I studied this, I wrote about this about 30 years ago. What happened is the Industrial Revolution, which began in England in the early part of the 19th century, spread rapidly to America. Why America became a economic power is because we adapted the industries. Mm-hmm. And then the greed mongers, the elite, pretty much needed workers. So they had to seduce organic farmers who had never been anything but a farmer off the farms. And they brought them into, you know, to New York or to London or to Frankfurt or wherever they were in the world and enslave them. And so maybe they made double the money, but these bankers actually owned the apartments they were in. And here the mother had 10 children, usually, you know, a lot of kids, and they were in these small little apartments. And now they were actually making less than they did on the farm and having a civilized life, mm-hmm. touching the earth. And so they had to find a way to package food because you couldn't supply millions of people, which were growing all of the time, with fresh food. It was a virtual reality. And then forget virtual, it was a reality. You just couldn't do it. So they started canning, they started processing, they started homogenizing, meaning killing. Then they genetically modified, and the list goes on. But the reality, quite simple, is we always aspire to be like the elite. And the elite 100, 200 years ago were the only fat, sick ones. Yeah. But they were sitting on their ass eating animals and drinking milk out of the bosoms. I mean, would you see one of these underneath sucking from the cow's nipple? You know, that's, would they do it? No, but they'd sit there and drink milk and say how good it was.
Yeah.
That's how it worked. It was pretty simple. We enslaved people. We took away their passion, their mission, their fulfillment, and they started to eat out of packaged food, reducing consciousness, and they were easy to control. But the one dream they had, someday I'll be rich and I can eat more steak. Yeah.
And it's interesting one, before we go back to the Hippocrates, when I talk to my parents, right, in their 70s, and I'm asking them, how did you grow up eating? My dad always said we never really ate meat, right, or fish, right, once a week, for Fridays fish, Sundays roast, something like this, right? And the rest of the week, we ate more vegetables out of the yard, with chickens running around, actually, adds a couple of eggs, but usually it was vegetables. And I think then the shift came to mass production, right? Everything available.
Fast.
And they, for them, it was something amazing because, oh yeah, everything is readily available all the time, right? And I think in our generation we realized the deficiencies and the disadvantages of that, and we'll go back a little bit more, but interesting.
Yeah. So how did then the connection happen with Hippocrates, with Anne, and how did you get involved there? And I mean, and really just like help.
So I was studying with these wonderful figures, and I'll name a few: Paul Bragg and Dr. Bernard Jensen and Dr. Christopher and some of the great figures in this field. And I said, well, I'm now ready to study since I have a university understanding of basic science. Who do I study with? So I said, who has the most experience? Who has the best results? And who's willing to take Brian Clement, who knows shit from Chanel? And I went to visit Hippocrates Health Institute, had no intent to live in dark, cold, and dreary Boston. Mm-hmm. And Anne Wigmore, the founder, asked me if I would come and work. And the one thing I wasn't lacking is ambition. Mm-hmm. And so I said yes and never looked back. And within a matter of a couple of years, they realized that I was an auditor. I could speak and I could read and retain and then speak. And they sent me to Europe, where I went basically to spend 3 months and spent 3.5 years there, opening centers, directing for 1 year the original Living Food Center, which was a raw food center in Denmark. And I directed that. That was Home to Garden, created by a wonderful medical doctor back 100 years before, called Dr. Christine Nolfi, who healed breast cancer on raw food, and helped Dr. Christian Schaller with Foundation Soleil in Geneva, Switzerland, and worked in Greece. And the Prime Minister of India brought Anne Wigmore and I there. And I had this global outreach and met my wife in 1978, when Anne Wigmore and I were lecturing in Stockholm, and instantly fell in love with her. And she was running one of Europe's most renowned centers at that point, reversing inflammatory disease. And Sweden at that point was a very progressive government, and they actually were sending Swedish citizens there for free.
Mm-hmm.
So you were sick, you had any inflammatory problem, you'd go to that center. And one of the government officials said to me, of course we send them there. It costs us a lot less money than having a person go to doctors and buy medicines for the rest of their life. Too bad the rest of the governments around the world don't have the integrity and the spiritual increment to understand that.
Mm. So it seems like in the 70s, they were popping more up.
Oh, yeah.
Did that movement slow down over the last year?
It sort of fell apart. You know, Sweden alone had 50 health centers. Now, most of them were plant-based. When we talked about health in the 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, it was all plant-based. None of this nonsense of organic meat and organic this. This is all just watering down what we knew. Mm-hmm. And fund bogus studies and tell you how good this is, and the paleo diet and the ketogenic diet. No, these are just money-making schemes that have no bearing on reality. So we watered it down, but your generation and the younger ones in you are going to take the ship and bring it back to port again. Yeah. And, you know, the data is so apparent. The science is so clear today. You have to be out of your mind not to eat an organic plant-based diet. And by the way, I'll add mostly raw. Mm-hmm. There's a wild difference between cooking a plant and killing most of the benefits and eating it raw.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get into more nuggets there. Tell us more what the foundation was of Hippocrates, right? So for people who really don't know any of the history of, and how was that and build that? You said in Europe there were centers going on.
Oh yeah.
What kind of things were you doing, and based on what, and how did it now evolve into the Florida one, right? The flagship one you have in Florida.
Okay, so let's go back to our founder, Ann Wigmore, who in 1952 wasn't feeling well, was a European who lived in Boston then. And in Boston, we have the top doctors in America, arguably some of the top in the world, and went up and that day told her she was going to die. That she had stage 4 cancer of her colon. And she, as a peasant, eating a plant-based diet in Lithuania, her grandmom, her surrogate grandmom, not her blood grandmother, was a village doctor. Mm. And she watched that doctor, as all doctors before that, use herbs and love and food and just did it. And by 1955, had reversed the cancer and had such a conscious awareness, said, you know, what's lacking in healthcare 67 years ago is still lacking today. And that's self-responsibility. You know, who cares if I know? Coming to Brian, oh, Brian's so knowledgeable. Brian knows, who gives a what I know? You got to know this. You got to take this on. You've got to employ this in your life. So she created the world's first lifestyle medicine center. So we pioneered that. And our whole thrust here is to educate you, to make you independent, not dependent. My job isn't to get you to be stuck on me. My job is to get you to be stuck on you. Mm-hmm. So you have enough confidence and knowledge and awareness and wisdom to say, I don't have to be sick. I don't have to age prematurely. I mean, I'm 70 years old going on 20. And it's not because I'm something special. I'm the norm. The abnorm is what's going on out there. Yeah. And so we have the state of the art of everything here. We have an energy medicine department, an IV department, hyperbaric chamber, psychotherapy. We have the state of the art. But at the end of the day, what we give you is yourself. And so that's our whole premise. It has been since 1956 until today when we're speaking.
And the biggest things, right, I want to say is obviously you have all state of the art, but it comes down to raw food, right? It's a big piece, right? Reconnecting to raw food, right? Reconnecting to real food, basically, and changing your diet and a ton of wheatgrass. Explain us a little more. If somebody
would come. So let's talk about the dietary end, since you're a vegan show that talks about sex. So I'm going to talk about sex a lot later. Hold on.
All that helps. All the diet.
Let me tell you, I think the sexiest damn thing in the world is to give up all the shit that kills you and look good and smell good and feel good. And then you're going to have sex. As I wrote it throughout in one of my books. Now, listen, what you have to understand is that most people are moderate today. That if they just give up the animal food, the eggs, the fish, the whole nonsense, they're going to get remarkably better, but they're not going to get healthy. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that from my own experience. I felt when I gave up animal-based food, like I was flying. I was on, you know, I was like a different human being. Mm-hmm. When I gave up the cooked food, I felt authentically well. There's a difference. Now, I eat some cooked food now. I'm not going to say I'm a saint. You got to be a saint when you're fighting a disease.
Yeah.
But I promise you that the most cooked food I'll ever eat is 10 to 15% of my diet by weight. Mm. Now, here's what we have to know. When you take a plant, I wrote this in my book, Life Force. Mm-hmm. Everyone is still, including my good friends, the authorities on this, plant-based doctors, talking about the old nonsense, the old school. Highest protein, yes. It has the highest protein. Where does protein come from? The sun. Where did the sun get collected? On a green leafy plant. get the hell over it. That's all you need to know about protein. Matter of fact, protons are what come from the sun. That's where the word protein comes from.
Yeah.
That discussion's over. Of course, because it's in the earth and hopefully it's organic soil, the highest vitamins, the highest minerals. Where do essential fats come from? Not fish. They come from plants. Where does the damn fish get it? From a plant called a sea plant. So, I mean, let's get over all that stuff. But that's not what I'm interested in. When you don't cook a food, when you don't cook an organic plant food, what you're really getting is what matters. The hormones, the oxygen, the phytochemicals, and the enzymes. So let me go through this rapidly.
Yeah.
Every thought, every feeling, every emotion, every action. You're listening to me now on the internet. You're feeling what I'm saying from hormones. Hormones are the messengers of chemistry, the language within the body. And they're so important and so essential. Where do they come from? Raw, organic, plant-based foods. So you keep getting the fuel of hormones from that. You cook the food, no hormones. Mm-hmm. And why people have hormonal problems today, they're eating animal hormones and not eating plant hormones. Mm-hmm. Second one is oxygen. In 1917, which is 104 years ago, a German guy won a Nobel Prize when he told us oxygen has to be present with a vitamin and a mineral before it's ingested into the cell. He was correct. They gave him a prize for that in Norway. The only place that you get nutrients and oxygen naturally together is raw plant-based food.
Mm.
The next one is the most important. Until 30 years ago, for the first 35 years of this institute, we were watching people heal multiple sclerosis, heart disease, Parkinson's disease, cancers, all kinds. The list went on. Aging slowed dramatically. But we didn't really know how it happened. 30 years ago, they started to study plants and said, my God, plants that began on this earth hundreds of millions of years ago, well before humans were here, well before animals were here, encoded inside of their cells are medicines for Homo sapiens, us. Now, can you imagine this? The most spiritual thing I'm going to tell you is this thing today. So listen closely. So.
Right.
Our damn species shows up like 11,000 years ago, fucking everything up as we do, and pretty much have a medicine from plants that are hundreds of millions of years, and every one of these plants protect you from and reverse certain diseases. Mm. Some are great for heart problems, diabetes, neurological problems, and cancers. So they start doing studies. I write books on this for the academics. So those of you out there that are really thinking you're really smart, if you want really smart books, you can buy them from me and I'll smart you out. They're called Food is Medicine.
Yeah.
It's really boring books for the rest of you, by the way. Only eggheads like these books. So all is data, research, science. So you can shove these up your ass until you really ingest what I'm telling you. Bottom line is, then we said, now we know why brain cancer goes away and liver cancer. Now we know why multiple sclerosis goes away. Now we know why it's so easy to get rid of diabetic type 2 condition. We don't have to do the work. We just foster nature.
Mm.
And the science is unbelievable with this. Plethoras of science. You know, if I quit everything else I'm doing and sat at home 8 hours to 10 hours a day and read, I wouldn't have enough of a lifetime to read all of the data on this stuff. So this is a done deal. And if you cook the plant, that medicine's gone. And enzymes. Now, when you go to university, which I did, and then they study enzymes, they say, hey, they're proteins. Wrong. The vehicle is a protein, just like your skin is a protein.
Mm.
What you really are is an electromagnetic life form. And so an enzyme is the way your electromagnetic body receives electric. And the only place you naturally get it is raw organic plant-based food. The whole absurdity that Wubenzyme cooks the shit out of a flesh of an animal and tells you it's a living enzyme, I'm also going to sell you swamp land in the middle of the ocean. That's not true.
That makes sense.
It makes so sense. So somebody comes to obviously the center, right? And then with a ton of different conditions, right? It's not just like the cancers. Tell us, like,
Healthy people come here. So, I mean, you know, the Williams sisters, no question, the top two female tennis players are on this diet. The top movie stars come here, and normal people like you and I come, and it's not prohibitive. Sure, you want to pay us a lot of money, we'll stick you in a fancy place. Mm-hmm. But the reality is you can come here for a reasonable amount. So we're in a position where we want to help every man, woman, and child on earth, not just elitist. But, you know, the program they put actors on and actresses in Hollywood to buff up to get muscles is a Hippocrates diet. Then they work them out because this is the highest protein diet in the world. Mm-hmm. So it's digestible, easy to eat protein. It goes in 15, 20, 30 minutes. It's in the cell. And so when you know, I still lift weights as one of my hobbies. And the reality is no diet in the world makes you have bigger muscles than this diet. And that's why you see the strongest women and men on the earth now are eating plant-based diets. And many of them have been through this institute.
Yeah. And tell us a couple of, like, because people still like, oh, I get it, raw food. Tell us a couple of things that is a non-negotiable when you go to Hippocrates. I know the wheatgrass shots are red, right?
Well, and, I mean, the wheatgrass is we're best known for. And
yeah.
Let's talk about natural history.
Yeah.
So the very first life form on Earth was an invisible algae called blue-green algae.
Mm-hmm.
Second were sea vegetables, dulcerami, hiziki, wakame. Then land came. And the very first land on the planet Earth was the island and continent of Australia. There was no other land. Everything was just a big ocean. When mm-hmm. that popped up, the bottom of the ocean had sand in it, and that's where the beaches came from. And these invisible algae started to actually go back and forth, and they produced grasses.
Mm-hmm.
The very first life form was invisible algae. Second was algae, and the third were grasses. Now, think about this. And if this offends any of you that are very religious, screw you. But the reality, quite simple, is we all came from that. So redwood trees came from that. You came from that. The building you're in actually came from that. The material it was made out of, wood, et cetera. So everything basically came from invisible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is why everyone we tell to take algae either as supplements or as food, or both, which I do, grasses, because they fundamentally have everything that has ever existed on this earth within them.
Mm.
There are things we have yet to identify. As a doctor of nutrition, a PhD nutritionist, I'm going to tell you, we know less than what we know. So there's still things, elements in there we haven't identified yet. So why not take them in their unadulterated living form? And we're watching the results of what happens. It just squashes premature aging. It squashes disease. It boosts the immune system. And so that's not negotiable. The other thing and most important thing we do, or has nothing to do with diet, is everyone gets psychotherapy.
Mm.
One thing that we all share is we're screwed up, that we basically think we're all perfectly fine, but somewhere you have unresolved issues.
Mm.
So why people eat crap food? And why people smoke and why people drink and take dope is because deep inside they have these unresolved traumas and turmoils. So until you unlock them, you're not going to adapt a life-enhancing lifestyle. You're always going to find a way to sabotage your life. So that's not negotiable. I've had somebody last year says, I'm unwilling to take that. I said, I'm unwilling to accept you as a guest then. If you're unwilling to do the work it takes, why should we try to work with you? That's like trying to screw a screw in without a screwdriver. You're not going to try to do it with your finger. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Well, and I think you touched on something there, where health, like food is such a big part of it, but it is, there are different pillars to being healthy. It's not just what you eat, but it is like what's going on.
Oh, it's everything. Exercise. I mean, you can't be healthy without exercise. One of the problems I have with the vegan community, they all look like shit. You know, they give us a bad name. They're walking around, they're skinny. They're not exercising. And I'm saying to them, you know, get some muscle on. I was really skinny, but I went out and lectured. You know, people would actually say, well, you can't, on this diet, you can't be strong. Well, I said, the hell with that. So I took up the hobby of weightlifting.
Mm.
And, you know, we've got to walk the talk. And it can't be just, oh, let's sing kumbaya and eat vegan diets. It's got to be, let's engage life. So yeah. We're having fun until we're 110 and drop dead one night when we're sleeping. That's it.
Awesome.
Sign me up. Also, obviously, I think on a vegan diet, it doesn't have to be healthy, right?
And most of these vegan diets today are, and I'm not here to criticize. If you're at the place of Beyond Burger and Impossible Burger, God bless you. It's better than McDonald's and all of the other crap. But these are not health foods. They're just planetary good foods.
Yeah.
I'm really happy you're not eating animals. I'm really happy for that. But I'm not happy for the fact that you're not going to be, yes, you'll be healthier than most people, but you're not going to be really the health that you should have, that nature and the universe expects you to have.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, when I was first eating a vegetarian diet, you don't want to know what I ate. It was, I mean, I would like, this is a true story. I would go to the hamburger place. This is not a joke. And I would always, back then hamburgers were really cheap, like 15 cents American. And I'd say to the guy, I want a hamburger, but without the meat. And the guy would be perplexed. He'd completely freak out. He'd say, we can't do that. And I said, because he was a worker. I said, what do you mean you can't do it? I'll pay you the same 15 cents. And he'd get the manager. And the manager inevitably would come out, and I'd have to negotiate with the owner. Well, you know, I want the pickle, I want the mustard, I want the ketchup, I don't want the cheese, I don't want the hamburger. Well, you know, we have to charge you the 15 cents. I said, okay, here's the 15 cents. Please make it for me. That was my idea. And I think that's most vegans, it's, they think about what they're giving up rather than what they're getting. Just when I was, for a short time, I was a macrobiotic, and I wrote one of Cushy's books for him. And, you know, even that diet, so much better than the Western diet.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is, it's a dead-end diet. It's highly cooked. It's highly processed, highly salt. They even allow fish for the weaker people in it. And, you know, you can't live on 60% cooked grains.
Yeah.
It just ferments inside of your intestinal tract. Sprout them, wildly different.
Let's talk about sprouts, because I think that's a really important piece. And I know for a lot of people that are listening to this, it might be new. They don't actually understand, like, what is it? Why is it important? So maybe you can
share. I used to think a live food was like an animal that you had to catch. But recognize that there's a difference between raw food and living food.
Mm-hmm.
A raw food, most likely, if you're in Europe, was collected in Portugal or Spain. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks later, you're eating it after you buy it at the bio store,
mm-hmm.
ecological store. So is it better than cooking it? Yes. But how much life force does it have in it? How much nutrition? Little. A living food, on the other hand, is a sprout that's literally growing at the time that you bite into it. Mm-hmm. Now, many years ago, I had to sit and contemplate this because I hated the taste of sprouts. And until I intellectually got this into my head, remember, I never ate anything green in my life. And the fact is, one day I was speaking to a friend of mine, and she said, look at this sunflower seed, a little black sunflower seed. I put this in the soil in 7 weeks. It's a 15-foot plant with 3,000 seeds on it that in the morning faces the east and at night faces the west. How many of those did you eat today? And I was thinking, I juiced them, I ate them. Holy shit, I had 2,500 of those. 2,500 of those. Now think about the energy. Think about the life force. That's what got it through my head. I finally, a light bulb went on. All at once, I didn't mind the taste of them. Now, the other thing is the ecological and environmental part. I've been blessed because being in my position and representing the most renowned institute on the planet Earth for plant-based diets and recoveries of health, I've been invited all over the world to speak and work in projects. So I worked in projects in both India and in Egypt. With hungry people. And my job was to bring in surplus grain, which every country in the developed world in Europe has grain they throw away every day to keep artificially low prices. America does $3 million a day, 365 days a year. They throw it away so that you buy cheap grain. And I was bringing in 100-pound bags, you know, 45, 46-kilo bags, mm-hmm. and producing 1,000 pounds of food. That's not only food, because for every 1/2 kilo, you actually produce 5 kilos.
Wow.
Yeah. Think of that. Of the highest protein food, mm-hmm. the highest vitamins, the highest minerals, the highest essential fats, and let's go back to hope again. Hormones, oxygen, phytochemicals, and enzymes. And I was watching starving kids and starving adults come back to life within 24 hours. And they took the condensed milk and the surplus cheese that the Germans and the Americans and the English threw away. They didn't know what to do with. The only thing they weren't doing is starving, but they weren't getting healthy. I can tell you that. So there's a lot of reasons to get interested in sprouts. And a lot of you out there are not independently wealthy. So I'm going to tell you, if you want the highest nutritious food in the world that everyone on the planet can. When I went into Calcutta, India, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, I had no problem telling people to eat this diet. Of course, here we also have our gourmet, vegan, plant-based foods and all of the things that keep white, rich people interested. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, you can do this on a shoestring budget. I had to when I started, let me tell you.
Yeah. And you touched upon it's living foods, right? Bringing back life, life within your body versus eating dead stuff, right? And animals. And I think that is such an important message also for people who just get started. We have a lot of in our community who just want to get started on a plant-based diet.
Let me tell you, the most important single thing that any human being can do is to adapt a plant-based diet. If you really care for the planet, you care for the future, you care for children and great, great, great grandchildren in the future. If you're not a plant-based eater, don't even pretend to be an environmentalist. Don't pretend to be a compassionate, loving person. Don't pretend to be spiritually awake, because it's all nonsense.
Yeah.
Cannot be and will not be, and by the way, should not be any of the above if you don't adopt a plant-based diet. It's a spiritual act. It is an economic act. It is a social revolutionary act, and it's the right thing to do. The right thing to do.
Cannot agree more. Anything said. For so many people, though, it's so complicated, right? Because we talked about briefly, you touched upon some of those other diets out there, right? People throw out new diets.
Keto is great.
Paleo, Atkins, right? Or what would you tell people who are like, oh, yeah, but I lost some weight on the keto diet? What would you tell people who are on this kind of thing?
If we've reduced our mindset to a diet being, do I have weight or don't I have weight? That's reptilian. That's like a big monkey. What it should be is, do I have vitality? Do I have energy? Do I have a libido? Does my brain work? Do I look good? Not, did I lose 5 kilos? Who gives a because you'll gain the thing right back again. You'll gain it right back again. Now, every once in a while, when I get really interested in something, often I'm able to get the big guys here. So I got the people who came up with the modern ketogenic diet. And they're lovely people, by the way. These aren't horrible people. The marketers are the horrible people.
Yeah.
And so after a 3-day science conference here, they sat right here in this building and said to me, we could easily do the ketogenic diet under the auspices of the Hippocrates lifestyle. Doesn't have to include cheese and butter and milk. Matter of fact, it would be much healthier doing this. So, you know, don't think what you read and what you hear. I knew Dr. Atkins. And what angered me with Dr. Atkins, he was one of the smartest people I ever met. He was genuinely a bright guy, but he was a con artist. And he realized the best way to make millions of dollars is to tell people what they want to hear. Yeah. So everyone else is saying back then in the 70s, remember, that's not a new diet. That goes back 50, 60 years. everyone said plant, 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 plant. And everyone felt guilty they weren't eating plant-based diets. So he was the first guy that said, oh no, we have new research. Eating steak's the best thing in the world. So overnight it became popular. That's like the Pope saying, you can f*** in the Vatican. Everyone will be there doing it. And he understood that recipe for devious success. Yeah. You know, you look at the paleo diet. Look at the work of some of the noble anthropologists that are alive today. Let me tell you something that a lot of people don't know, because I just learned it 5 years ago, not even 4 years ago, that how we came up with the idea we were hunters and gatherers happened at Oxford University in the early part of the 19th century. That it was a scheme that a bunch of lazy anthropologists didn't really know what we had eaten, because they had no way to test scientifically. They didn't have the budget to go out and dig up bones and look at people around the world. So they basically guessed we were hunters and gatherers, because when they would see tribes that they would visit, in Africa as an example, when they knocked down the forest, so when they knocked down everything, the poor people had nothing else to eat but animals at that point.
Yeah.
You know, Africa was this extraordinary paradise, you know, like the grounds here at Hippocrates, a tropical paradise.
Yeah.
So they assumed. Now, recently, people like Dr. Leckie, a renowned anthropologist, says, let's look at the teeth of our ancestors up until now. He said, wait a minute. There's no signs, the indentations on the teeth, that we really ate animals.
No.
There were hardly any signs that we ate seeds, nuts, grains, and beans. When we ate those is when there were droughts. So finally, anthropology has done the homework they should have done 200-400 years ago. Grant you, we have technology today, microscopes and computers that can show these things, but it's a done deal. So very many of the contemporary anthropologists tell you we never ate. So the paleo diet was a plant diet. You think our ancestors were crazy enough to get a knife and run really fast and chase an animal? They'd rather pick a berry or eat a leaf. Yes, they were flourishing. Look at, I haven't touched an animal food in half a century, and I'm healthier and stronger than, you know, anyone could possibly be at 70 years old. And the fact of the matter is, I'm not the exception. Don't give me this shit that it's a blood type diet. I have the kind of blood type they tell you I should be eating meat. Forget it. I don't eat meat. I don't eat cheese. I don't eat any of that nonsense. And then people say, well, I'm a flexitarian. I eat fish. Read my book, Killer Fish. You're going to see why I call it Killer Fish. And if you read that book and still eat fish, you're suicidal.
So that is, if anybody's listening, that is a book to read on fish.
Yeah. I have a question. What do you eat? I'm just thinking, anyone listening right now, they're probably okay, cool. Like, how does your day look like?
Don't take this as what you should do.
No,
I know. Five, six days a week, I eat one meal a day.
Mm.
I haven't eaten breakfast in 49 years.
Mm.
I drink only juice. I drink about 1.5 to 2 liters of green juice. I drink wheatgrass every day, plenty of water. So I sustain on high levels of energy juice. Mm-hmm. And my one meal, sadly, I'm doing it at the wrong time. I'm doing it at night because I'm so busy during the day. I was just writing articles before we came on here for our upcoming magazine that everyone can subscribe to for free, by the way. But what happens is you should be eating a main meal in the middle of the day. Now, if you look at 150, 200 years ago, that's how your great grandparents did it. They were farmers. So they would work their asses off. They'd stop for lunch for an hour and a half, 2 hours. They would sit with the family and eat. And they hardly ate at night at all. When the sun went down, they went to bed. So the human body was first nomads. Sun went down, they went to sleep. Sun came up, they got up. So our bodies were evolutionarily wise developed to eat small amounts of food occasionally. That's why today they're getting spectacular results with intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
Not eating is as important as eating. And when you eat, it has to be the highest quality nutritious food in the freshest form, not something picked in Portugal 4 weeks ago. Now,
yeah.
Do I eat that stuff? Sure. I eat those things too, but the core of my diet are these fresh living foods. Mm. And so on weekends or a couple of days a week, I often eat two meals, but always at night when I do have time during the day, I eat my large meal in the middle of the day, very small meal at night. And I'm older. If I were a 20-year-old athlete, I'd be eating a lot more.
Yeah.
You know, that's I do take a lot of food-based living supplements though. Mm. And why? Because I mean, I take five types of algae. I told you why. Yeah. I mean, you could live on that. You'd be awfully skinny, but you could live on it. You know, I take different herbs. I take different nutrients.
And Brian, what's in your green juice? Tell us,
The green juice I'm drinking here is half sprouts, sunflower, and pea green.
Yeah. Now,
sunflower is a complete protein with essential fats on it. So this cup of juice has a protein the average Western person receives and digests in 3 days. So it regulates my blood sugar. It feeds my brain, builds my cells, my teeth, my bones, everything that cells making, and gives me energy because of the essential fats in there.
Yeah.
The pea greens are complete protein. They also have protease, which kill bad guys. They eat protein. So they kill viruses, they kill bacteria, kill cancers. And all of us, by the way, the healthiest woman or man on the planet, every day we produce about 1% of our cells that if we're not well, can become cancer.
Mm.
So why we have nearly 60% of the population on Earth now will get cancer during their lifetime is because our genes are switched off because we're not eating these foods. We're not eating plant-based. We're not having joy. You know, we're working jobs. We're in marriages we're not happy with.
Mm.
You don't feel fulfilled because you're basically not close to the earth again. You're not living the way everyone lived forever until very recently, the last five generations.
Yeah.
Remember, the only people that were as abnormal as you and I were the rich, fat folks we call the aristocracy before. The peasants were having fun. They were dancing and singing, running around.
And coming to a little bit to the end, but we have so many people in our community also and people listening who have health conditions, right? I shared my condition when we started the company that I had cancer with 24, testicular cancer. And I remember asking my doctor, because you're in this field, right? You're in with your doctor. And I asked him, Crystal was next to me back then, hey, what can I do on the food wise? Can I help somehow? Yeah, I'm going to chemo, but can I help somehow? And he's like, no. You can nothing you can do.
He doesn't know. He really, you have to forgive him.
He's a great guy. We were still talking. He opened up from personal experience because he realized one of his kids was sick and he realized, hey, that I have to change my approach a little bit. But after that, what would you tell people, right? We have so many people coming for us with cancer and like, I'm on chemo. I'm going through chemo.
Well, let's address your problem first. I mean, your generation, testicular cancer was so rare, but because you have cell phones in your pockets, that thing's skyrocketing. What we know from the work of Dr. Hardell out of Sweden and Dr. Davis here in the United States from a Yale University study, Stanford University study, and Exeter University in Britain is that the cell phone within 30 seconds, I'll repeat it, 30 seconds nullify and neutralize 40% of your sperm count. So that's the number one reason people are getting testicular cancer, probably 30, 40 times higher rates than I saw when
Oh, yeah, more rates. I heard that too. More rates. And it's.
Let's talk about cancer. Then we'll talk about the easier concerns. Remember, 60% of the population is going to get cancer in their life. I would have cried my eyes out if I was with a 23-year-old guy back in 1970 when I began my work, because it was so rare to see young people. Mm-hmm. And today, I became callous to it. Every day I'm talking to a family with a 10-year-old or the 8-year-old with brain cancer yesterday. And it didn't just happen. God didn't say, you're bad people, we're going to kill you now. We're killing ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it's the mother who has the laptop computer or works 8 hours a day in front of the computer. It's the deadly plastics that are in all the water systems of the world we're drinking. The British just did a study and published it last year where they said if you eat three fish meals a week, the British people do that a day, but only three a week. At the end of a year, you have 2 ounces of plastic in your body. You don't think that causes cancer?
No.
How about the pharmaceutical drugs? They've never tested drinking water anywhere on the planet Earth, including the North and South Pole. Pharmaceutical drugs aren't there. And by the way, $10,000 filters don't take it out. You need distillation for this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I've worked personally with several thousand people that have reversed advanced cancers. And people are usually not smart enough to come here when they get cancer. They usually have to go through the monkey show and fail. And you were one of the lucky ones. It's only 30% of the people truly recover long-term with testicular cancer from mainstream medicine. That means 70% eventually die.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. 93% of the people who get treatment for cancers of any type will never, ever not die from cancer. They'll eventually die from some form of cancer. And the treatments themselves, chemo and radiation, most often give you a secondary form of cancer. You, thank God, are on a plant-based diet. You, thank God, switched on the gene. You know, as my good friend Dr. Campbell taught us from his brilliant work in the 1980s.
Brilliant.
He switched it on the cancer, off the cancer gene, and on the proper gene. So don't be frightened if you have cancer, because it is something you can recover from, but you've got to be completely, absolutely ready to change. And I mean, change big time. Mm-hmm. And the less treatments you have in most cases, the better the outcome. Mm-hmm. Well, number two, things like diabetes is a joke. It's not even a disease. It's a lifestyle choice. I've never worked with a type 2 diabetic who does what we say that doesn't recover. Not because we did it. It's lifestyle does it. You know, we don't take credit for any of this stuff. The body's smart enough to do it without us. Matter of fact, it's smart enough to avoid us. It basically says, hey, you know, heart disease, 97% of the people that have heart problems have a lifestyle problem. It's only 3% have a valve that's broken. That's a disease. But I don't consider eating cheese and eating whipped cream and eating ice cream a disease. I consider it a sociological pathetic problem that people have. I think eating chicken. Oh, I don't eat meat. I eat chicken. What the? Chicken's worse for you than meat when it comes to animal fat. Look at the studies that were done in Europe recently where they looked at the genetics of the chicken people ate. It was actually in the gene of the cancer in the breast. Mm-hmm. And so these are things that are correctable. And we've watched people with HIV recover. Easy things like chronic fatigue syndrome recover. But you've got to be absolutely responsible. Yeah. Nobody can heal you. The only one that can heal is you yourself. The best we doctors can do is guide you, support you, and let's hope to God tell you the truth, the honesty.
Yeah, this is great advice for everybody listening. And where can they get more, right? Not everybody can come to Hippocrates. Where would you send them?
A lot of people can come here, but we have online programs.
Yeah, how do people find you? Where can
You get on HippocratesInstitute.org. We're a nonprofit, so I'll spell it for you unless you're Greek. H-I-P-P, that means hip, H-I-P-P-O-C-O-C-R-A-T-E-S, H-I-P-P-O-C-R-A-T-E-S, health, H-E-A-L-T-H, H-E-A-L-T-H, Institute, so just abbreviate, I-N-S-T, so health, I-N-S-T, .org, O-R-G, not .com. And you can look at all of the things we do there, and you can access for free our magazines that come out quarterly, and they go back to 1980, 40 years since I've been the director. And Keep up your good work. And
you
keep
too.
Being a walking, talking, living example of what people are capable of once they choose to live in a human way. And that's what you're doing. Be well, everyone out there. Take care.
Ryan, we have one more, a little rapid fire to end the show.
All right.
And a couple of rapid fire, and you just fill in the blanks. What's your favorite plant milk?
Hemp.
Favorite cheat food?
Baked squash.
Favorite book or documentary about health?
Cowspiracy is a documentary.
Yeah.
And Back to Eden is a book written 150 years ago.
Back to Eden.
Back to Eden.
Yeah. Nice.
Favorite workout? Or you maybe
weightlifting.
I never leave the house without
my wife.
When I get hangry, I eat
sprouts.
And wildcard question, which is a funny one, because you're also working with your wife, right? As a co-director.
Yeah.
And we're working together. You're working with your wife. So
it's the best thing in the world. That's the way God intends it, I think.
I think so too. It's the best thing in the world. So I highly recommend it to everybody.
Let me tell you, women are, if we don't turn the keys over to the women, and I mean quick, we're going to crash and burn. It's time not to say women have rights. Yes, they have rights. What it is let women have opinions. Let women lead. Let women guide us. Look, if men are so important, how come we're not the ones that give birth to the future species? So it's time to let women be the foundation of the future of humanity.
I agree. That's a great.
I feel this is a great end.
Great way of the end.
You like that ending, at least.
I like that. Now, it's something we actually talk about a lot because one of the things we do in our company is we have moon days.
Yes.
And, so that means that actually women, when they're after period, they can just like take a day off, a day for themselves. And it's funny because even men say like, why women? Why don't I have it? I'm like, hey, first of all, we should be able to talk about periods. Like, because
that's
it's
right.
Always pretend, right? Like they don't exist. I'm like, that's where life comes from. Let's all remember.
Exactly. Let's do it.
Really crucial for life. So it's something we, even within the company, we're 75% women.
We're 80% women. I'm all for it.
You're smart hiring 75% women. You'd have less slackers.
Exactly. If you look at, it's interesting, right? And we traveled a lot. If you look at, again, some of these communities, right, in lower income communities and or
developing
or indigenous nature, like the women are the ones working, right?
Well, and,
and the bosses and they are in control, right? And the guys are
Let me tell you, my mother was in control at my house when I was a kid, and my wife's in control at my house now.
Yeah. my mother as well. And you mentioned Dr. Campbell. We had him on a podcast. He's one of our heroes, I think.
I love Dr. Campbell. He's one of the most humble, kind. Yeah. He's one of the few people I can say is an authentic scientist.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's amazing.
He's not a show.
More energy than all of us with 84, 85, how old he is now. It's fascinating to see. Brian, sometimes we feel bad because we're just saying the same things you have been saying for 50 years and it's nothing new we're saying. So we're just
Feel good. We need, remember, there's 8 billion people on the earth. We need about a billion of us to keep saying this until it gets into the thick heads of everyone else.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you so much for all you have done to pave the way for us saying the same things and have resources like Hippocrates. Crystal wanted to come. Crystal's uncle was there.
Yeah,
the family was there.
Family
a lot of family
there.
Was already part of Hippocrates. Crystal's going to come. We're like,
always trying to drag him with me, but somehow.
I
want to
come too.
Oh, now you want to come. Okay.
Let me tell you something. When you get over here, we're going to bring you to a higher level of health to a point where you're going to be so happy. You and Crystal are going to be dancing 24 hours a day.
Awesome. Great. Brian, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time. And we'll keep in touch and we'll let you know when we're coming.
Be well. We look forward to it.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thank you.
Bye.